There's obviously so much to cover, and I won't attempt. I want to draw your attention to one part of the Passion reading, and it's unique to Luke's Gospel, which we read from. And in Luke's Gospel, he mentions in Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane, as do Matthew and Mark. But Luke was a physician, so we believe. It looks like he was a physician. And he mentions that Jesus' sweat drops like blood. When I was in the Holy Land, we had the great privilege of being in what's called the Church, the Church of All Nations. I think that's the one. Anyway, it's the church in the Garden of Gethsemane, and it houses traditionally what's traditionally believed to be the rock that Jesus prayed on in the garden, where he fell on his face and he went three times. And that rock has a small little fence around it, low enough that you can kneel next to it and literally put your head on the rock. They gave us an entire hour in there, just us. Us seminarians from Mundelein. A great privilege. When we got on the bus to go back to where we were staying, one of our Bible teachers was with us. And he comes out of an era of, let's say this fairly, a time where they were really searching for the, as you might have heard this term, the historical Jesus. The problem, there's nothing wrong with searching the history of Jesus as he walked on earth, but the problem with this whole endeavor is that they have cast out anything of the divine and anything of the miraculous. And what you're left with is a dualistic Jesus, meaning a Jesus who is merely a human being, or at best, the Arian heresy, a superhuman being. And so we got on the bus, and the teacher grabbed the microphone, and he said, "I just want you to know." Now, we just got done with a holy hour in there. It was profound. It was powerful. "I just want you to know Jesus really did not sweat blood." There's a guy from the Archdiocese of Seattle. He's a priest there, and he's a very quiet guy. And you heard one voice come out of the back of the bus, "You gotta be kidding me." It kind of incensed all of us. Well, it spurred me on to do some research, and I did. And I found that sweating blood is not a myth. It's not merely an image of something that might have happened. It's a real phenomenon. It really does happen that people literally sweat blood. What happens, it's a thing called hematohidrosis, or that's one word. And in that process, what happens when somebody is experiencing anxiety at an extreme level, they can sweat blood, but it's not from the anxiety by itself. It's when the anxiety has a commensurate reduction in intensity. When we experience anxiety, what happens? Our blood pressure goes up, and it sends excess blood into all parts of our bodies, including the capillaries, and it is capillaries that encircle our sweat glands. And when there's a commensurate reduction in that anxiety, if it happens fast enough, the capillaries constrict so quickly that the blood doesn't have a chance to get out of the capillaries, and they burst. And blood comes out of the pores. You sweat blood. Now that happens to human persons, people like you and me. Jesus is not a human person. He's a divine person who took on a human nature when Mary said yes. You'll note just before that happens that God the Father sent angels to him to minister to him. When Jesus is feeling this anxiety, what does he do? He goes three times to prayer. Who is more united to the Father than the Son? Remember when we were kids? You were scared? Where did you feel relief? In the arms of mom and dad, didn't you? Well, Jesus did the same thing. There, in that divine unity of Father and Son, he had a relative reduction in anxiety because his Father had not abandoned him. He can't. And his capillaries constricted, and he sweat blood. As I said to our professor, if it can happen to a human person, we can never experience the level of anxiety that Jesus did in the garden. Why? Because it wasn't merely physical suffering. It wasn't merely emotional suffering. It was spiritual suffering, because there he felt the weight of every sin that had been, was being, or would be committed in the entirety of human history, including mine and yours. The ones I committed yesterday, the ones I committed today, and the ones that I will commit tomorrow. He felt it all then. And nobody, none of us, can have the divine unity of the first and the second person of the divine Trinity. And so therefore, Father, if it can happen for a human person, not only can it happen for Jesus, it had to. It had to. Why should that matter to us? Because we carry these palm branches. It's not just a little cute routine we go through. They represent something. They represent the promises you and I make every time we receive a sacrament. And they also represent every time you and I break those sacraments, those vows, those promises. They represent us laying it down as he's on his path to the cross. Whose cross is it? We say in the stations, Jesus carries his cross. No, he carries ours. He carries ours. But lest we think that it is finished and we have nothing to do, go to the fifth station. Simon of Cyrene helps Jesus carry the cross. When we're feeling anxious, when we are feeling like the weight of the world is on us and we don't know how to get it off of us, you don't carry it alone. If Jesus, the second person of the Trinity, the eternal Godhead, if Jesus, the divine Word, who created us, if he can let one of his creatures help him carry the cross, how much more should we let him help us carry ours? It may not feel like it's much of a help, but he will give us what we need to get through and not just survive, but to flourish and come out on the other side of that cross in glory. Just one caveat. We got to let him.